Hello, everyone. Welcome to Mining Now. I'm your host, Jared Downey. Today, we are doing part of a three-part series with Micromine, and we're featuring Micromine Elastry. We're going to cover different elements of it, and we've even got a consultant coming on that is going to that has put it into play for their clients. And today, we've got Matthew Lovelock. He is the technical service manager for Micromine. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Is this your first time thrown into the podcast environment?
Yeah, definitely. First time. And I'm not real big on social media, so just being in front of the camera, a little bit nervous, but
That's why I couldn't find you.
Yeah, no, I don't exist. No LinkedIn, no Instagram, no Twitter.
I think I'm down to just LinkedIn now. I might have a YouTube channel. Yep. Yeah, it's which is nice. But it also is handy for sharing out information, which is what we're going to try to do today.
Yeah.
So let's start with your background, because we're going to talk a lot about Micromine Elastry, but I'd like to set up who you are this delivering the information first. What's your background in the industry?
Yeah, so mining engineer by background. I graduated from the University of Western Australia here in Perth about 15 years ago now. And my career is actually a little bit backwards. Through the last year of my study, I was lucky enough to get an internship with a major consultancy based here in Perth. So I worked a couple of days a week and then a graduate engineer joined them. Didn't miss out on any site time. I had a few secondments with a few of their clients, which is great. But after a few years, wanted to really get out into the industry. So during my time as a consultant, developed software skills and then took them into operational planning roles across gold, iron ore, uranium before coming back to Perth, get out of the FIFO lifestyle. And I always had a good appreciation for software and the value add that it can add to mining operations. So the opportunity to join Elastry came up. I joined them, and then a couple of years ago, Elastry got acquired by Micromine. So I became part of the Micromine family then.
Matthew, I just wanted to ask about, you said a couple years ago, Micromine, it's now Micromine Elastry, they took over Elastry. Has the software and the platform, has it evolved quite a bit since that acquisition?
Yeah, I guess since the acquisition, the Micromine Elastry product now has really gone from strength to strength. So in those 2 years, I think we've almost doubled our customer base. Wow. And really leveraged off Micromine's global expertise. So we were focused heavily in WA and iron ore. We've been able to expand to other commodities. And we've got a lot of new customers overseas now through Africa and some through the Americas as well, which is fantastic. And we've got software experts and qualified mining professionals all around the world, which has, I guess, really strengthened our service offerings relative to the Elastry product, because it's all good and well having a great product, but you know, you need to have great people and provide a great service to accompany that, and I think we do that, and Micromine's been a big part of that. So we have world-class support systems, training, we can do it online, face-to-face, people travel around the world to meet to different mining operations to deliver that there. And then we're really building our self-paced online content through our learning management system too. So as new users are onboarded, they don't have to wait for that formal training, which will come in time, but there's some short courses there available online that people can do to get up to speed quickly.
I just a quick side note, because we're heading to Perth filming episodes, and we'll probably be already, some of them might be released by this time, the time this one comes out. Just for anybody who doesn't know, why is Perth such a hub? I mean, it seems like everybody within the mining sector is their head offices are in there. I'm wrong. Not everybody, but there are a lot. Why is there such a hub there for Australia specifically?
WA is endowed with some of the best mineral resource deposits in the world, so just very lucky. And it's not just one particular commodity. Iron ore through the Pilbara, we're close to a major customer in China and Japan as well.
Right.
Gold through the gold fields, high quality deposits, and then more recently lithium as well. We're sort of a leader in that space. Hard rock lithium again, selling that product through into Asia. So just a little bit of luck, and it's just, you know, major deposits just where they are, so it makes sense for mining companies to base themselves here.
Right, so the operators are actually located with their head offices in Perth, and then the tech companies and the service providers follow.
Yep, Yeah, full value. So consultants, contractors, the principal miners, all based in Perth, which is fantastic for Micromine because it makes it very easy to do business. We can walk down the terrace in Perth and meet up with most of our customers, clients on a regular basis, which leads to a really strong relationship. Mm-hmm. So we can get feedback on the software, make improvements. We can do that face to face, and then we can actually roll it out quite easily to get users into our office, upskilled, value add to their planning processes and systems.
Well, it's good to understand the environment because we're going to be talking about ore blending. So, you could argue. I mean, I'm Canadian, so I have to say, of course, Canada does it better. But no. I think that area can make a really, really strong argument for they have the experience. Can you lay out the ore blending, what it is, the background of it, and just sort of give us an intro and give the audience an intro to it.
Yeah, I mean, blending, it's a critical part of the mine scheduling process, and it sort of has multifaceted impacts on the mining operations, whether it's economics or sustainability. Mines, they're complex. They're only getting more complex. The best resources are being mined out. So the ones we're looking at now, they're deeper underground, they're lower grade. There's a number of reasons because we have that variability that ore blending plays a key part. This is something I'm sort of passionate about is we only get the chance to mine a resource once. Mm. And we want to get maximum value out of it. Because until, recycling, becomes more efficient and more part of the process, that's what we need to build infrastructure. And support the economy going forward. So I guess, why is it so essential? As I said, we're optimizing the resource. We want to get mine the full and use the full entire resource spectrum from high to low grade. And while we're doing that, we want to reduce waste and increase the overall resource recovery, which leads to more value, better economic efficiency, quality control, customers downstream, their refiners and their downstream processing, that's geared towards a particular product. So, they expect a certain quality coming in. And as I touched on earlier, the geology is so variable, you want to try and make sure through that blending process that you've got a consistent product going to market throughout the full life of the project.
Just a little bit, when you say your resources as they become harder to get to, and
yep.
Was ore blending part of a strategy 50 years ago? Is it fairly new? What's sort of the lineage of it? I mean, obviously it's been scaled up to a whole other level now, but has it always been part of the operations, or is it more of a recent thing?
I think it's always been part of the process. There's always an end customer that expects a product to be delivered on what's agreed upon. Also, every mining company, or just about all of them, that there's some shareholders, and during the in the economic evaluation process, promises are made. You're going to deliver this amount of material at this grade. That's going to result in this financial outcome. So if you don't deliver on that, you're not meeting their expectations, and you're going to have unhappy shareholders at the end of the day. So I think it was still around. Now, because we have computers, we can sort of plan to a greater level of detail, and there's probably more expectation that you will be able to meet those commitments or expectations of the market because you have better tools to do so. So 50 years ago, still there, but maybe you could get away with not doing it. I don't think that's the case now. You see it on the share market. If you miss expectations or targets or commitments you've made, shareholders quickly exit, and your stock price falls.
How much of a struggle is it for mines? Is it often the case that mines aren't hitting targets? How much of a struggle is it for them, even if they are hitting the targets?
I mean, every mine I've worked at, blending has been one of the highest, I guess, priorities in terms of making sure you get it right. Because if you don't, it can have serious impacts to the economic viability of the project.
Matthew, I got sent something over. Can we bring it up now? And can you walk us through an example of it not being done right? Not the target not being met, and actually describe to the audience what we're looking at here.
Yeah, so this is a screenshot from the Micromine Elastri product. Our blending capability is one of the really strong points of the product, and you know why a number of our customers choose that software as their mine scheduling product of choice. So this screen's from our ATS product, which is Elastri Tactical Scheduler. It's a tactical planning space, sort of 3 months through to 2 years, 5 years. And what we've done is we've run the schedule, and in there we've got some targets. And what it's showing is in the red there, where we haven't been able to meet or sit within some min and max bounds for that particular grade element. So this is a demo data set, dummy and iron ore mine. I think there we're showing Fe, silica, alumina. Fe is on the revenue side. Alumina and silica are penalty elements, usually, or contaminants. So it's showing where we've met or haven't met those blending targets for those three elements there.
Just very basic question. So how is this data, how is this getting inputted? So that, like, two questions. Who's looking at, who is the first person who actually sees this within the operating mine? And how is this data getting to this display?
Yeah. So the first person that sees it, I guess, is the mine scheduler. They hit, you know, they put in all their schedule inputs. Those targets there are inputs, you know, they're probably based on customer contracts. They're saying, okay, we need to deliver this material within this product specification. They run the schedule, they see that it hasn't met it. And then, you know, they can inform management whether they think they can or they can't meet it. And you know, make adjustments to the schedule and hopefully bring it back in line within those targets.
So this is going to directly now be converted to essentially whoever is actually running the mine, the operator, whether it's a contractor or the mill, all that process is now, this is going to trigger what is going to happen from there.
Yeah, that's right. So this tactical plan will inform the production plan. And then, so you go down the planning horizons, production plan will sort of inform the execution plan. Mm-hmm. And if you can deliver on each of those plans, chances are you'll meet your, I guess, corporate objectives. If you can't, then you escalate it downward and say, hey, we're going to miss the grade spec, but we know about it. Management knows about it. Our customer knows about it. It's not great, but at least people are informed.
I think you laid out quite clearly how important it is based on even your own firsthand experience in the mining industry. Would you say it's done well within the industry?
Not really. I think it's still definitely a gap where improvements can be made and you know really realize extra value in those operations. But it is hard. You drill out your ore body, you complete your geological estimation, it's wrong. So as you start mining, that's when you only really know what's coming out of the ground, and you just have to be able to adjust for it.
Could you actually lay out a couple of examples for us, just sort of kind of make it a real world scenario?
Yeah, so I'll just, as I touched on when we were just running through my career history, I've worked across a different commodity. So I'll start with iron ore. I was sort of working at a small boutique iron ore mine. At that time, the iron ore price was booming. I think it was, you know, call it the first real boom, where the iron ore price went well in excess of, you know, $100 US a ton. And we didn't really think about optimizing the resource through the entire resource spectrum or throughout the entire project's life. So we high graded the deposit effectively. Mm. We went to the highest grade area, we mined it out, we sent it to market, we made lots of money. But then we found that the iron ore price started to drop. And you know, the quality of our resource going forward, we're now into the lower grade ores as well. So we effectively ended up a bit stuck. We had lower grade ore, which was lower value. We had no higher grade ore that we could blend it with. And it ultimately meant that, you know, as the iron ore prices dropped, the project became economic and it went into care and maintenance. But had we been a little bit smarter and maybe stockpiled that higher grade ore in an area where we could access it, brought some of the lower grade deposits on earlier, blended it, all right, and rather going, you know, super high grade early, have a steadier grade feed for longer, we might have got out of that, I guess, dip in the commodity price, and that operation possibly could have still been in operation today. So that's one example.
Yeah, I want to just jump in on that because it's something that I'm So I can see how if a shareholder sees that, oh, you're the production is just there's great results, and now it drops off.
Yep.
Now, if you're really well educated on that operation, that might not be alarming. You still know it's still this is because, but most investors are probably not looking at this information. So, is there sometimes scenarios where the blending is actually having to be done at a higher cost because you're stockpiling ore, but you're not putting it through the processing plant, so that you stay steady? It just seems like if there was no worry about the end user, it's just pure efficiency. It seems like maybe you're actually could lose some efficiency in some of these scenarios.
Yeah, you'll lose a little bit, and I get to the point, you want to optimize the full utilization of the resource to extract the full value. So if you only, I guess, see the short term and realize the short term benefits, you'll make a lot of money very quickly. All right. But then it'll stop. And then, you know, later on, like that project is still in care and maintenance now, and there's all these resources that are now no longer economic, and it, you know, there's a high cost to restart too.
Right.
So, you know, once the tap's off, it's off. Yeah. So that was iron ore example. Part of my career, I've also spent a lot of time in gold. So the iron ore example I spoke to was sort of all about grades. Gold, a little bit different. You're practically mining money, because gold can be a commodity. You can pay for things with gold at the end of the day if you really wanted to do, and you had a customer that accepted it. So on the gold side, I worked on a project where it was more, rather than grades, the blending side of things was more important on material quality and material type. So we had an underground, which is typically a fresh rock feed, and then we had an open pit, which is generally more oxide, had a bit of clay content in there as well. But the assumption was that the feed from the underground would form the bulk of the feed into the mill. And due to underperformance on the underground side, it actually flipped. So it's meant to be 70-30 underground open pit, but we had to go to the other way. Just production impacts on the underground side meant material wasn't available. And that actually had quite large consequences in terms of economic efficiency, because the mill was configured one way. The jaw crusher expected some hard rock. It didn't get that hard rock. It got some softer clay material, which actually sort of started choking up all the feeders and the chutes, and led to reduced productivity. We just wouldn't get in nameplate throughput. We're not crushing as much, therefore we're not producing as much gold, and it really affected the economic viability of the mine, and it actually meant we started missing some of our repayments to the bank, because that's how they financed the project.
And why did that switch happen? Why did they go from it was supposed to be 70 open and then 30 underground, and then they had to switch? I missed why they had to do that switch.
I was just the underground mine didn't perform as expected.
Right.
So what we really needed to do is rerun it. As soon as that information came to light, we should have rerun our strategic plan, or we needed to start making reconfigurations to the mill to account for that different material type.
Right. Because 70%. So because the mill itself, the crushers. Okay, I see what you mean. So like this chart we're looking at here, which is associated. It's got four purple, three green. What is this in reference to?
That's a screenshot from Hall Infinity. Which is pretty much, it's just a picture of the viewport, really. And it's showing that all the different sources that could go into a central crusher. So when we actually run these different scenarios through the software, you can sort of play with different options. Do you take more from pit A than pit B, or do we need to flip it around? So that kind of links to the real value add of having software rather than trying to do these blending exercises in a spreadsheet. I've seen some mines just almost pen and paper exercise. You can run these different scenarios, test different sources, that produces that optimal result based on, you know, your corporate objectives and the objectives of the mine.
Is it taking into account also the, I just found it interesting you said about like the crusher and then it going through the feeders. When we talk about real world scenarios, it's a very, I mean, I've seen crushers plugged up. So I understand it's very specifically what you're talking about. Is this accounting for the actual processing plant's capabilities as well?
I wouldn't say it's accounting for it.
I just found
it
an interesting example you used.
It's a consideration during the scheduling process.
Right.
And it becomes an input. We know the crusher is expecting material of this composition. Mm-hmm. And to achieve that composition, we need to look at all the potential sources.
Right.
And it's a bit of a game of mix and match, okay? Bit from here, bit from there, all right, to get that end result.
But you're running
And if something's not available, sorry, you go, Jared.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, so you're running these scenarios right through the program, right through Macromine Elastri.
That's right.
That's amazing.
So we can test different mining sequences and different blending scenarios. We'll often, when blending is key, we'll start using stockpiles. So you can sort of see them in the image there, the little crushers in pink, and around it, there's about 7 stockpiles, which are little tan-colored cones. So we can run the software and it says, okay, to meet this blend target, whether it's material or grade, you need to take a little bit from the stockpiles. You need to get some from the pit to meet that, I guess, specification.
Can you walk us through, you mentioned tactical planning. Can you walk us through the right way to do it? And feel free within that to go, what are wrong tools? How do you actually plan one of these out?
Yeah, so you'll start with a strategic plan, which really is a high-level economic evaluation showing, you know, how to maximize the NPV of that project usually. And then what you want to do is pass that strategic plan into a tactical plan, which is generally another product which has a higher level of detail in it. So your strategic plan will usually inform how much, from when, in what time frame. Where your tactical plan really focuses on the how. What equipment do you need? What are your real constraints? What dependencies are there? Do you have to mine this first before you go here? So you're really starting to build in that technical detail, your tactical considerations around equipment, crusher throughput, and to meet those blend targets. It also starts to inform what you need on the operational level in terms of real estate for stockpiles and how big those stockpiles need to be. All this information is generally it's not run through the strategic planning process, and it's generally not available either. And then once you've got that tactical plan, you use that to inform your production plan, which is a shorter planning horizon to 2 weeks. And again, another level of detail as you move towards execution. Mistakes I've seen, and it's quite common in the industry, people would try and take a strategic plan, all right, and they'll skip the tactical planning process and they'll try and lead it straight to production. And you're just missing all that detail in the middle. And once you get to production, you're only 2 weeks out. It's very hard to change things. You can't get an extra truck. You can't put extra approvals through the environmental process to get extra footprint for bigger stockpiles. So it's really important that when you're setting up a mine, that you're regularly going through that strategic, tactical production execution phases on a regular basis, and each of those plans is just informing the other.
Can you walk us through you have these different tools within Micromine Elastri. Can you maybe choose one and sort of walk us through either the usability or what a client will actually be seeing in the tools?
Yeah. So I'll take you through a couple of our products. So there's actually 5 products in the Micromine Elastri suite. We've got Rapid Reserver, where we define our scheduling, or effectively set up our scheduling inventory, haulage, point-to-point cycle time analysis, and fleet matching, so trucks to diggers. And then we use that to inform and constrain the scheduling process. Tactical scheduling, production scheduler, and then spatial conflict metrics as well. So we'll take a couple of those products that are really key, a rapid reserver, where we set up our scheduling inventory, and we need the detail in that scheduling inventory because that'll give us the information that we need during the blending process. And then we'll look at tactical, where we can actually set up some targets through product specifications and then see if our schedule results are actually aligned with them. You'll see in the example, they're not, and how quick and easy it is within tactical scheduler to rerun a different scenario and bring it back online, within target. We'll start with Rapid Reserver. So we're taking a look now. So inputs into Rapid Reserver, we have our resource model and we have our pit designs. We take those pit designs, which we convert to solids. We interrogate it against the model and we effectively get our scheduling inventory. But we want a level of detail in there that allows us to have different, material types of different qualities and different grades. That we can pick and choose when we're trying to optimize in terms of getting that optimal blend through our schedule there. So you'll see in the video, we just set up the res model and we've created some different grade specifications for low grade, medium grade, high grade. So we've got those different sources that we consider when trying to achieve a particular blend. So that's on the resource side. Then within the software, we also have it on the source side. So we have our pits, which are cut up into different stages, and that's sort of informed by the strategic planning process. Then we can take those stages and then we can cut them up into benches. And then as we move later on, we can take each of those benches and then we can cut them up into blast blocks and then cut them up into dig blocks as well. And then within each of those dig blocks, we know how much high grade, medium grade, low grade material that we have. So a lot of different options there that we can use when we're trying to achieve a particular blend. And we set up all that information through Rapid Reserver and then we carry that scheduling inventory through to Tactical Scheduler. So that was a bit of a sneak peek in terms of how we set up our scheduling inventory and the tools within Rapid Reserver. Going to move on to Tactical. I've sort of skipped over a number of steps, but if we demoed the full software suite, it's a few hours. We're just trying to trim it down and show you a few things that are really specific to blending. We have the ability there to target different product specifications, whether it's source to destination. There's high and higher and lower value transactions. So if we don't need to send material to a stockpile and then rehandle it, it's obviously lower cost, less equipment hours. And we're not double handling material. So often when we run our blending, we're going to try, if it's possible on that particular operation, to direct feed as much as possible and then use the stockpiles thereafter. So there's optimizing around that. And then also, this data set that we're looking at is a dummy iron ore mine. So we're really trying to target that FE grade and get it within certain bounds. And then some contaminant grades as well, alumina and silica, which is quite common in a mining operation. So we've got some product specifications. There's many different examples, but what we're going to do is sort of set up a dummy cash flow that we're optimizing on. It's not a real cash flow. It's not used for any financial analysis whatsoever. It's just really to help drive the LP algorithm that's running in the background that's optimizing that blend. So we'll play through there. We've got a crusher cash flow and then we've got some grade targets on FE, alumina and silica. We've set them up and then we're into the schedule run mode. We're going to run the schedule. We won't make any changes and we'll just see what results it gives us. And then we've also set up some min and max grade bounds so we can quickly see when we hit that run button whether we've met our targets or not. And then after that, we can we've looked at the numbers. We can go and switch over to the animation and see where we're mining at what time and what material we're pulling off stockpiles as well. So this is one of the real strengths of the Elastri software. You get all the numbers and those metrics, and you can see them clearly on the calendar, what periods you're meeting targets and what periods you're not. But you can also see those results visually which gives you the chance to inspect whether that mine plan is actually operationally achievable in practice as well. You can see where each piece of equipment is working at any given time. So looking at the scheduling results, number of periods, we didn't meet our targets. So this is one of the real strengths of Elastri software. I've used some of our competitor products and actually used them out in the field. And one thing that was, I mean, you can make it work, but to run a new scenario, you have to copy and paste the entire project. And then you end up with like 20, 30 different project files, and it can be really hard to sort of keep track of what was what. So within the software, we can do a quick, simple copy and paste of that scenario and then go and change an input. So what we're doing here is actually telling it that that grade, the FE grade, is really important to us. So we're upping the deviation penalty, which effectively brings the result back towards that target and says, hey, this is what we really want to focus on. So we've upped that there. We're going to rerun the schedule, which goes by quite quickly. And then we'll see the new results. And where we had a lot of red before, now that's been removed. And we're, for most periods, we're actually sitting within those gray targets now. And we can flip between the two scenarios and see the difference. Okay. And then we can actually take a look within the software and see what contributed to that change. And in this particular case, our mining sequence hasn't changed because we haven't told the software to change the mining sequence. But what it's done is look at our stockpiles and pulled material on and off from those different stockpiles to meet that particular blend. And then we can take that information and pass it down the line, hopefully ending up in execution. And then they know on what day that I need to pull this amount of material from this stockpile, this amount from that other stockpile to achieve that target. And that's really blending within our software.
Thank you for walking through that. And I think for an audience, we've done software episodes before, and it's one of the challenges always when you're talking to the audience to try to get them to understand what you're actually going to see. And I've asked that question many times on the show, and it's, some people have given great answers, but it's not quite the same as actually seeing it. So thank you for walking us through that. One thing I came to mind while I was going through it with you is, for the onboarding side of things, the scenarios you're running through, do mines have this? And this is a little bit of a layman question, but do mines have this data available if they want to onboard Micromine Elastri tomorrow? Where does the mine have to be? What kind of data do they need to have to be able to use this platform?
Every mine or potential mine into the future should have this data available. In terms of inputs, we just need your resource model, your pit designs, and from there we can develop your scheduling inventory. We need to know what equipment you either have or want, and then we feed that into Hall Infinity, and that's what's used for our cycle time analysis. And they're your two major inputs, your haulage, your scheduling inventory, or your reserves. And then we set up your schedule, and then we can apply different logic and drive the schedule in different ways to try and target the results that you're trying to get. So if we have all that information and a good engagement with an end user, we can typically set up a model in Tactical Scheduler within a couple of days. It's really quick and easy to do. And one of the beautiful things about Elastri software, it's configured in a workflow. The steps are outlaid. It's not a toolbox where you need to go and know exactly where to input certain data. We guide the user through a process that is clear, and later on when you need to inform management, is clearly auditable as well, so you can show them exactly where that data has been inputted, and then it's really easy to get your schedule results out of as well.
And you have a trial, actually, right? This is a full on plug, and we promote companies on the show, so I make no qualms about doing it. For people that are interested in trying it, what is the setup? What do they can expect? I believe there's a 30-day trial. What do they need to expect in terms of onboarding team members that they'll need to get involved? Sort of paint that picture for us, if you can.
Yeah, so we run a sort of a free, no obligation trial, and we really want people to put their data into our software and test it out in earnest before they decide to purchase. So during that trial period, it's not just handing over the software. We'll actually take your data, fully configure a model, show you how to run the model, so provide some training, and then give you some time to run different scenarios, try and maybe mimic your existing planning processes and make sure you can get the same outputs, hopefully in faster time, which will allow you to run additional scenarios and really value add by looking at and solving, you know, what if we did this, what if we did that. And we see companies love that about our software because it gives them time back to actually test different scenarios and see, you know, is there a better way of doing things. So as long as we've got, you know, an end user who can also assist us with that trial, because I mean, we know the software really well, but we don't know the project. So there's often quite a few questions during the setup. So as long as we've got an engaged end user, the model configuration training can happen very quickly, and you can be up and running in the software in a very quick time.
Matthew, thank you very much for coming on the show. We are going to put for the audience, we are going to put that 30-day trial link in the description of the episode, and with also, I believe there's also an article that's going to be in there, is how to onboard new hires with mining software training in 5 days or less. So we're going to put both of those in the description, of course, thanks to Micromine and everything. But we will not be linking Matthew to your Facebook because...
yeah, can't find me.
Nor can anybody find me. So that's nice. But again, thank you though for coming on this platform and sharing it out, because, you know, years ago when we first started, it was tough to get people. I mean, we were a new show, so people didn't know who we were, in all fairness. But the mining industry was very reserved about sharing information. It was really done through very specific channels. And these types of platforms are making it, I mean, we're seeing the amount of viewership that's now people using YouTube as a research tool. So it's really amazing. And so thank you for taking the time to walk us through this, because it is important for the industry. So I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for watching. There is going to also be links to other episodes we've done with Micromine, specific to Micromine last week, just from different perspectives to really round out the platform, as well as other completely separate episodes we've done with Micromine. So please keep watching. Thank you, everybody. We will see you on the next episode of Mining Now.